like they used to be.
Scratched.
Yes, welcome to SVR. It's John Barrett here, the Admirable Git who had the Marine on the seafront. And this week I'm going to do one for Gavin because it's he comes from Scotland and I think he will really wallow in this. You'll be thinking, how did he manage to get this? This is an interview with Donny Monroe from the group Runrig. And once it starts, it'll just flow through. It will all make sense once it gets going. And I recorded this years ago, and Donny gave me a bit of time. We were down at Paul, I think. Oh, yeah, pretty positive it was Paul. And yes, it'll be good. It really is a good one. And I hope you will enjoy it. I'm not going to say any more than that because most of it gets explained by Donny as we go along. So that's the idea, and I shall now press start and we shall get going. Hope you enjoy it. Donny, in fact, that was the track called Sky, and that is actually where you all, the initial group all came from, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. I mean, there's two of us who actually, whose families still live on Sky, but in actual fact, four of us grew up on the island, four of the original band members, and, you know, it was the base, if you like, that Runrig launched itself on the world from.
At school, did you learn
English before Gaelic, or is it a basically amalgamation of the two?
Well, basically what happened was, at the time when I went to school, I spoke mostly Gaelic at home. And then when I went to school, the playground language by that time was English, so Gaelic was dropped totally, 100%. There was no real input from the educational establishment to maintain the language at that time. But in the last 5 or 6 years, they've realised that, you know, the educational policy was sadly lacking in regard to the language. So they've got bilingual education, they've now got Gaelic medium primary schools, they've got preschool, nursery, you know, Gaelic playgroups, etc. So, I mean, they're starting to address the problem.
So it's gone back full circle a bit.
I think there was a period probably in my parents' generation where, although they were native speakers and they loved speaking the language, they weren't disenchanted with the language, but they didn't view it as being something that was going to necessarily benefit them in any way, because the whole of Highland culture had been so suppressed up until that point in time anyway, you know, right from 1745 until then.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, there was this element of suppression in the people in the Highlands, and I think they viewed their language as being a second best and unnecessary.
I see. What early influences did you have in music, anyway?
Well, my own first influence was my mother, who was a singer. She sang Gaelic songs, and that's the first music I heard. Also, just listening to traditional Gaelic music, to Scottish dance music as well. When we were kids, there was a lot of Scottish dance music on radio, and that mixed in with all the things that were happening in rock music, pop and rock music. So if you like, there's a sort of fusion of these two areas of culture, you know, sort of American rock culture and the West Highland Celtic traditional Gaelic culture.
Yeah, because I mean, you're no sort of overnight sensation as a group. You've been going for near enough 12-15 years.
Well, as a sort of student-based band, you know, that started playing for fun, and we recorded our first album in 1978 while still at college, and you know, from that point forward, we've been working in some capacity in music, but not until 1982 in any full-time professional.
Oh, in fact, Highland Connection, though, and you were still part-time, weren't you?
Yes, that's right. Highland Connection and Recovery.
Oh, yeah.
Both these albums were done while we were doing various other jobs.
You actually were. You weren't students anymore.
No, well, I graduated and I was teaching art.
I see. And obviously you started touring around Scotland, and this is how things have developed, really, I suppose.
We started from... I mean, really, I mean, you know, going back to basics, we started very much as a band who were playing in a tiny geographical area, in some respects, in the West Highlands, the islands, in fact. And, you know, for a runner at that point to move into urban Scotland was quite a step, because, you know, urban Scotland didn't have an awful lot to do with West Highland culture, any more than Manchester or Birmingham would be any more likely to step into line with it. So that we had to make that transition to gain ourselves a sort of Scottish audience in a Scottish, in a national basis within Scotland, and that took some time. And then, you know, from there, we always wanted to become, you know, a very well-established Scottish band. Because we were totally self-funded, we weren't signed to a label at the time, we were operating the entire thing ourselves, we had to make it a cost-effective business, we had to make it a successful business that had a solid backbone, and Scotland always was going to be the solid backbone or skeleton that we built our following upon, you know. Yeah. And we've sort of, over the last 3 years, we've expanded a lot, you know, into Europe and into England. And
you must have had some harrowing times touring, I should think, up around the Highlands.
Well, not really, because, I mean, if you like, it's our natural terrain, so there may be a few tourists who would have come up from London and found the roads in Scotland maybe a bit treacherous, but when you've grown up there and you realise how underfunded an area is for central government, you know, you can tend to live with these things.
So it wasn't until 1989 before you went to a major label, was it? Ridge, which was your early LP.
Sorry, 18 months ago, I think.
18 months.
Just about. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask why a live LP to start with?
A very simple answer to that question. The reason, well, in fact, the first album that Chrysalis, in a sense, were given by us was The Cutter and the Clan, but it had been released on our own label before that. Sitting in the pipeline, already recorded, virtually mixed and ready to go out into distribution on our own label at the point we signed, was the Once in a Lifetime live album. And in fairness, I mean, a lot of people have said, you know, a strange choice, a live album for the first album with a major record company, if you like, and a new audience, because a live album tends to be an album for your your faithful.
So almost the greatest hits.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But I mean, it was. It has to be said that Once in a Lifetime was recorded very much with a view of supplying a demand in Scotland that had, you know, was obviously growing. People had been asking us for a live album, and we thought it was time to do one.
Fair enough.
We signed to Crystalis. They heard it, they liked it, and they decided to put it out. So that was the nothing more complex than that.
You were down this way, is that in Bournemouth about 18 months ago, weren't you? When you were back at the support act with Chris de Burgh.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We played Bournemouth.
You haven't toured around here much of Satcher.
No, we haven't. We haven't touched the south coast at all, really, apart from Bournemouth, and we also played in our last leg in December. Is it November of last year? We played in the Leascliffe Halls in Folkestone, is it? Leascliffe?
Probably, yes, it is.
So, yeah, we're pretty thin on the ground as far as live appearances in this neck of the woods is concerned. But hopefully this is a start to redress the balance.
I was just going to say, how do you find audiences compare? Because, I mean, up in Scotland, you're almost a household name, aren't you now? Do you find it strange?
It's obviously the audience here is an unknown factor for us because we haven't played here, so it'll be interesting to see what it's like. But certainly when we played in Bournemouth with Chris de Burgh, I mean, that was his audience, obviously, and they took to us, you know.
I didn't go because I didn't want to see Chris de Burgh, but all it was plus support. It wasn't plus Remrick,
Right, well, they took to us. We were a very warm audience. But, I mean, the nearest, I suppose, to this area is London in terms of, you know, concerts in the south. And our last time into London, we played the Hammersmith Odeon to 3,000 not expatriate Scots, I must add. You know, very much a broad cross-section. And a very enthusiastic. I suppose we've been very lucky with audiences. You know, we've always got on well with audiences. But the band has always tried to get on well with audiences in a sort of, on a human level, you know, as performers. We've never wanted to have a sort of mystique and great separation between us and the people we come to play.
You've got popular by playing live, haven't you, really?
Yeah, it's certainly not. It's certainly not to do with having hit singles,
not,
anyway.
No, not at all.
But that's something that has deluded us up until now. But, you know, it's just one of these things. There are various avenues. It's taken us a long time. It's been a slow progress. And in Scotland, people ask us, you know, to comment now on the amazing success and all the rest of it, but we're not aware of it because it's been just like growing up, you know.
Yeah. Because you've kept together well as a group, haven't you?
Yeah, there's been, you know, the personalities, you know, the band has been based around friendship to a large extent, realising the strengths and weaknesses within everybody. I mean, you can put together supergroups, but they don't necessarily make good music.
No.
And, you know, we're not a supergroup, we're all individuals with strengths and weaknesses as musicians, and you know, we're all totally aware of what they are, and we work within the confines of that, these limitations.
Because you would sort of go as the voice. You've got two songwriters who do a bulk of your work, haven't you? Then with Malcolm on lead, you are really all individual components, aren't you?
Yeah, individual components that go together for some reason or other and seems to work.
Great. Where will you be touring in the near future?
Well, I mean, this leg is just a sort of short trip back into to cover some of the ground we played last time. When we played in England last time, we played quite a lot of university dates and student unions. And, you know, despite what your taste is in venues to go to, student unions, generally speaking, are not the nicest places in the world to go. And it's quite peculiar because, again, it's got to be a reflection some way of the underfunding of the educational institutions in this country. Because when we play in Denmark, for example, or in other parts of Scandinavia, very often the public venues are in fact the student unions, and they're beautiful places to go. You know, there's a great sort of, people take pride in the place, they're not run down, and we felt that a lot of these places were depressing kind of places to come and listen to music, and we wanted to do a civic theatre type tour in England, which is why we're doing these venues at the moment.
That's great. Well, thanks for your time, because you're busy. If there's one track from the Searchlight LP to finish with, which one, any special one?
It's quite difficult because Searchlight, it's an album very much about individual songs, and there's you know, I can be totally objective about the songs because I didn't write them, and there's to my mind, you know, quite a few very, you know, good songs on it. Depends on your taste, I suppose. If you want something in the quieter vein, then you have Every River, Final Mile. If you want something that rocks up a wee bit more, you have Tear Down These Walls. So I'll really leave the choice to yourself.
Thanks very much. Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, we're going to have some of the Searchlight LP now, and that it's really enjoyable. So I hope you enjoy it, and I hope Gavin does especially. Here it comes, Searchlight LP, all on vinyl.
By the mountainside, by the ocean blue, where the struggle broke my heart in two. River of millions flowed downstream, a golden highway to the sea of dreams. But now you're here, I feel no fear. I can't believe the news from heaven. Oh, sure, I saw the world inside. A spark of life on a wire from heaven.
Interrupt this record now because Rumrig are no longer with us at all. In fact, Donny left them about early 90s, and they had another singer after that a few years later, and eventually they decided they were going to sort of retire, and tragically then the singer died. So that's the rather sad story all about Rumrig. But I shall sit back and let you enjoy the music.
Every hill I tried to climb.
Were a band I did see quite a few times, and the last time I saw them they were doing their last tour, and it was well advertised it was going to be the last tour. I saw them in Zurich, so I went with Glenn and Johanna and we had a good time, although I got to be honest, I didn't like the singer. Donny Munro was the better singer. Anyway, let's listen to a bit more of Searchlight.
On your fair ground.
Now we're going to have a song sang in Gaelic, or Gaelic, whichever you want to call it. And it's, in other words, you won't know any of the words, but that's beside the point. I think they did one on the other side as well. We'll come to that later.
What makes me walk through Ireland's shrines and Ireland's...
No, it's the next one that's in Gaelic. We'll just listen to this one instead.
See a country crucified, your beauty crowned in thorns. And as I watch that wondrous cross that's been hewn down and severed in two, there's something here that draws me near to where the green.
Thank you. Don't understand a word what they're singing about, but you do have a translation on the LP all about it all. So that's the Mighty Rum Rig, and I'm going to be playing Rum Rig now for the rest of the show, just so you sit back, and if you're enjoying it, you will definitely enjoy it. That's a good way of putting it. And let's just play the rest of the LP for another 20 minutes or so, and that will be the end of the show. Here we come. Here's another track by the Mighty Rum Rig. That's the end of side one, so I'm going to flick it over and we'll play side two. And I just thought to myself, yes, we'll talk over this one. When I was in working at Cellophane in Bridgewater, we had a chap came down, Ewan Campbell was his name. He was a good footballer, I will admit that. But he lived on the Isle of Barra. And one night, it was pouring with rain on a Sunday night in Bridgewater. And we'd gone out for a drink or two. And then he said, oh, I must phone home. And I thought, well, crumbs, I can't stand out in the rain. He said, oh, come on in with me, don't worry about it. So I went in with him and he started speaking Gaelic, or Gaelic, whichever you want to call it. And so that was, he came from the Isle of Barra, I sort of vaguely remember. Ewan Campbell was his name. And so there wasn't just the Isle of Skye which was doing it all. Anyway, let's get on with the music now.
Thank you.
Dedicate this show to a gentleman who's been a recent convert to Rumrig. He's called, well, my wife says he's called Effing Eric. He's the chef at Holsway Manor, the folk centre there. Anyway, this is for you, Eric. I better mention Suzanne as well, otherwise she'll say, why not me?
Just come the new, the chill. našich dnech, Jan Goljaj, Šony Mora Jar, Kale Nikdies, Karl of John Gur, Kalam Anushik, Kalam Gulafi, Yelal Svihulia, Udien Hale, Gulgale Sviharana, Kalam Alekbu, Erchi Anyadu, Dol Horn, Shoni Gune, Alasvidoli Kilabuine, Kit Fat, Shoni Rudi, Yani Finish, Yandok Shoni Nik, Nesmo,
as you may know, I used to have the Marine down on the seafront. I suddenly thought, as I was playing this LP through, there was used to be a couple of Rumrig LPs and in there, and Searchlight one was basically signed by the whole band. I've got it back with me now, but it was all for you to see when I had the Marine. Yes, that's about it. Let's have another track, and then we're almost time to finish. My goodness me, that hour's flown by.
We grew up in the spaces where the four winds blow. We let these lands and bodies, traitors to the plow. We thought we knew the answers, thought we had it made. We kissed down in the city, swore we'd never change.
The show, and I suddenly thought of something. Years ago, they had a gentleman called Jackie Leavin as a support act, and at the time, Rumrig wouldn't ever play on a Sunday. It was against their religion. I don't know if they carried on all the years with it, but they definitely didn't play on a Sunday. And the other thing was, Jackie was on the tour with them, and he was prone, because he was prone to swearing a bit. And Rumrig basically said, if he doesn't tone it all down, he's off the tour. So that's the, well, I don't know if it was the end of Jackie, but anyway, let's have this one last track and then we have to say goodbye. Hope you've enjoyed it all. And really, that is it, yes. Thank you for listening to Sid Valley Radio. It's really good. And I shall finish after this track with the last bit, all the information about Sid Valley Radio. So let's just sit back and enjoy this last track of the day. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. It was all the Mighty Rumrig all the way through. And I'll give you a little bit of information about radio. And that will be it. Sid Valley Radio, proper community radio. And here's the little information. But thanks again for listening. Here it comes.